You're listening to the Bitcoin.com podcast, the number one place in the world to learn about Bitcoin. Open your first wallet, buy your first Satoshis, and get involved in the Bitcoin ecosystem that is changing the world as we know it. Satoshi Nakamoto, wherever you are, thank you for making all this possible. Now, let's get started.
This is Richard Jacobs with Bitcoin.com podcast. And today I have a very special guest, very well known in the Bitcoin community, Eric Voorhees, CEO and founder of Shapeshift.io, a website that allows you to move between cryptocurrencies quite easily. How you doing, Eric?
Doing very well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I appreciate it. a lot of folks do know you, but for those that don't, can you give people just a brief overview of your background in the industry and what Shapeshift is?
Sure. I've been involved in Bitcoin since mid-2011, back when the price was about $5. And, the biggest exchange was Mt. Gox. I've been involved in a number of projects. I was the head of marketing at BitInstant in New York. I started Satoshi Dice, which became the largest Bitcoin casino in the world, and sold that in 2013. And for the last 2.5 years, I've been building Shapeshift, which is a digital asset exchange that allows anyone to convert one type of blockchain asset like Bitcoin into another type like Ethereum. So we have over 40 of the leading digital assets supported on the site. And the reason it is different than most exchanges is that we don't hold any customer funds. So and we don't have any accounts. So you don't have to sign up with us. You can just sort of like a vending machine, put in one type of asset and we'll spit out a different type of asset for you.
Yeah, I personally use Shapeshift and it is pretty cool. You go to the site, you say, I have Bitcoin, I want to exchange for Ethereum, for instance, and you specify the amounts and you send it from one wallet to Shapeshift and then Shapeshift sends it to your receiving wallet and it makes the exchange. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, the idea was to make converting cryptocurrencies as easy as sending cryptocurrencies. So that's the goal. We try to keep things simple for the users.
Yeah. How did you come up with this idea? Did you look at the exchanges and saw that, people needed a different type of product or what was your motivation?
It was actually for me originally, I wanted to buy some altcoin. I forget what it was. I just wanted to, place a $500 bet on it and see if it was going to be successful in the future. So I didn't want to spend like tons of time on that, just something quick. And I had Bitcoin and I realized it was going to take me all afternoon to go get that other asset, signing up with an exchange and depositing funds and waiting for confirmations and putting up a bid order, waiting for it to fill and all that stuff that you have to do and then withdraw it and everything. And I thought that was a little ridiculous. Why can't I just snap my fingers and turn a Bitcoin into anything else? And that was the impetus.
That makes sense. And then, so you don't have actual user accounts, but can you, you can track how many transactions are happening in a day, right? And maybe the volume too.
Yeah.
The size of the transactions.
Yeah. So we have no idea how many customers we have, but we know, the orders that go through us, we process about 1,500 to 2,000 orders a day. And then, in terms of value, like January, we processed almost $20 million in customer orders for January. So it's been growing very fast. And it is interesting when you have no idea, like how many customers you have or even how to reach them, really, because we don't even have emails for the users. Huh. So unlike pretty much every other web business, we have some unique challenges, but the whole idea is that converting assets should not take effort. It should be frictionless.
What do you feel like the challenges are because you don't know customer data? What's difficult for you?
If you have customer accounts, for one, you know where most of your users are, right? You know which countries they're in. You can see their names and like how they're spelled. You can get a feel for like the types of people that are using your service. You can always email them and do surveys with them and get information about what they're doing. And you can track behavior per user. So you know that, like, 10% of your users might do 50% of your orders. And then there's a long tail of users who just tried it once or something. We don't have any of that information. So, we, as a business, that makes it hard to really know our customers well. So we've had to do that through other means, by, community engagement and having really top-notch customer support, so that when orders fail, customers get in touch with us, we can take care of them and try to get to know them that way.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next, is what happens if an order fails, and why would it fail?
So orders fail for a number of reasons. Half the time it's sort of user fault, and half the time maybe one of the blockchains that they're sending over is having problems, or our exchange had an error. We have deposit limits, which rise and fall with our inventory, and so when there are runs on a certain asset, we can be depleted of inventory before we can refill it. So someone might send in something to trade, and by the time we receive it, the deposit limit is below what they thought it was, so that'll fail, that kind of thing. So in all those cases, a user can always put in a return address optionally, so that if an order fails, their funds just go right back to them. For those who don't put in a return address, they have to just email us, and then we can take care of them.
And how actually are you processing orders? Are you literally buying from someone and then selling to someone?
No, we are the seller. So unlike every other exchange where you're basically, they are matching a buyer and a seller, we are the seller. Mm-hmm. So when a user buys something, we're very much like a vending machine, as I mentioned, or a retail store. We have an inventory of all the assets that we support. And when a customer buys one, we're selling them a piece of our own inventory. And then as we run out of the inventory, we have to be buying more of it. So we connect with all the major exchanges and do our own trading to make sure that our inventories stay where they're supposed to be. So there's quite a bit of complexity to the backend system and the inventory management, and all the pricing algorithms and everything, all to just make the user experience significantly more simple.
All right. So when someone shapeshifts, let's say Bitcoin for Dash, you're buying their Bitcoin and you're selling them your Dash?
Correct.
Okay, I see what you mean. And then what size transactions can you do? I know it depends, but, just ballpark, are most of the transactions people want to do small, or are they larger? What can you handle?
So for the more liquid coins, like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, Dash, we have higher limits. And for the less liquid coins, we have lower limits. For the liquid coins, limits are usually $2,000 to $5,000 worth in a single order, but someone can do, multiple orders if they want. And the reason that there's those limits is because we guarantee a price or an exchange rate. So if someone converts $200 of a coin, they'll get the rate that we show. If someone wanted to convert $2 million of that same coin, obviously we can't give them that same price, because these are relatively illiquid assets and there would be slippage and the price would get worse for 2 million. So that's the major reason for the limits on the coins. Our average order is probably $350 worth. But the average is a little misleading, because most orders are either really small, like $5 or $20, or at our max, like, $2,000.
Okay. So it's a distribution like that, I guess they call it a bimodal distribution. Okay. But if you average them together, it looks like 350.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Out of the two, are most of the, I would guess most of the orders are real small, and then you have a few bigger ones, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And everything in between. I mean, it's pretty varied.
What about the coins themselves? Which ones are most popular? I would guess Bitcoin, what's the Pareto after that? Which ones are close to being most popular and down there?
So Bitcoin is both the most popular to sell and to buy. It's roughly 45 or 48% of all the transactions has Bitcoin on one side or the other of the trade, which makes sense, because that's where most of the market is. So people are either, entering or exiting Bitcoin into other things. And then the other major ones are Ethereum, Monero, Dash. Zcash has been reasonably popular. Litecoin. It largely follows the market caps of the coins, with the major exception of Ripple. Ripple is, I think, like number four in terms of market cap, but it is not traded very often, at least on our platform.
And speaking of market cap, you have a free service called CoinMarketCap, right? That shows the currencies and the volume and price. CoinCap.
Yeah, CoinMarketCap is another similar site, but our site is coincap.io. And yeah, it's just a resource, a market data resource site that shows the prices of all the different digital assets. And there's, you know, hundreds of them at this point. CoinCap shows in real time, you know, how the trading is happening, and the prices are updating all the time on the page. And actually, it has a mobile app. CoinCap has a mobile app for iPhone and Android, which is, I think, one of my most used apps. I check it, you know, pretty religiously all the time. It's really fun to watch how these markets go up and down. It's a little bit of an addiction.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's true. It's true. When you have, you know, one of the coins, you tend to watch the price, you know, 20 times a day, like the stock market.
Yeah, exactly.
What about, you know, the exchanges have to deal with AML and KYC. Do you, because you don't have your customers' info, or what's the situation there?
So we don't do any conversion to money. We don't convert any money of any kind. So we don't handle dollars or euros or yen or anything like that. So we're basically just converting different blockchain assets. And to that extent, with the exception of New York as a jurisdiction, we don't need to deal with the AML KYC stuff. New York, after they passed the BitLicense, that legislation actually required a business like ours to get a BitLicense to operate in the state. And we felt that that license was both incredibly burdensome and also highly unethical, because it would require us to get all sorts of private personal information about customers, which is then vulnerable to hackers. And
right.
Identity theft has been an immense problem all over the world. And we finally now have this technology that allows people to do online economic exchanges without revealing their identity, which is amazing. You know, it will save the world tens of billions of dollars a year in identity theft. And yet there's licenses like the BitLicense that want to go back in time and require everyone to provide a bunch of personal information. So we blocked New York, and that's the one jurisdiction, along with North Korea, where JPEG is not available.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Huh, so just those two. That's crazy, those two places, New York State and North Korea.
Yep, kind of sad.
You had to lump those two together, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the BitLicense has been an utter disaster. It was proposed by Benjamin Lofsky and the New York Department of Financial Services, NYDFS. And basically, it just requires any company that's handling digital assets to operate basically like a bank. The application to get the license, just the application of questions, is over 40 pages. And a fully completed application would be like 100 to 200 pages of documentation needed to just beg permission from these bureaucrats in New York to operate there. It's horrible. So only two companies have actually gotten a BitLicense thus far. And
I suppose Coinbase got it recently. They're the third, right?
So maybe three. So I think ItBit, Coinbase, and Circle. But Circle's no longer doing Bitcoin buying and selling. So only two companies are actively using a BitLicense, and like 40 or 50 have applied. And it's just so at this rate, they're approving about one per year. It's like this perfect example of regulation gone wrong and everything that's bad about allowing government to get involved in people's financial affairs.
Yeah. All right. Well, back to Shapeshift. Okay. So because you're staying in the crypto world, like, so someone can't exchange fiat for crypto or crypto for fiat using your site, right?
Correct. And they will never be able to.
Gotcha. Right. Well, okay. Yeah, there's this moat, I call it, or chasm, you know, jumping from the fiat world to the crypto world and coming back out of it. But you guys stay out of that part, so I understand.
Yeah.
And you don't provide wallets either, right?
Right. We don't provide wallets and we don't hold any customer money. So, most of the regulation that affects some Bitcoin companies has to do with when money is involved and when the holding of customer funds are involved, because, the latter is a consumer protection issue. So we go above and beyond what any regulation could ever do, and we protect consumers by not holding their funds in the first place. We're the only exchange that can get hacked and not lose a single customer dollar. And that's not because we're following some regulation to do so. It's just because we are innovating in a way that it helps users on a technical level.
Right. If you were to be hacked, it would just wallets that you the company personally holds, but not
yeah,
customers.
Actually, and we were hacked last year. In April of last year, we got hacked and lost a bunch of money, but it was our own. It was our own inventory because we don't hold any customer money. So while that sucked, it was, the first time a crypto exchange has been hacked without any risk to any of the users, which I think was a really important milestone. And, ironically, since we don't have accounts of the users and since we don't hold their personal information, none of that personal information got hacked or breached or jeopardized in any way. So,
that's great.
Yeah, I mean, basically, if we had applied or complied with the BitLicense and stayed in New York, we would have had to get all sorts of personal information about users. And then when we got hacked, all that information would have been sold out on the dark web. And, 100,000 people would have had to deal with a bunch of identity theft issues.
That's crazy. It's good that you're doing this. So what do you see for 2017? What are some new projects you may be working on, or what's you think is going to happen with Shapeshift? How do you see it growing?
So we have two new products that we're building right now that'll come out this year. Both of them are related to Exchange, but they're substantially different than the current Shapeshift. So we'll sort of have four product lines. We have CoinCap, we have Shapeshift, which people know, and then the two new products this year. We're not quite ready to announce them yet, so I don't want to give details on what those two new products are, but I think people will be pretty impressed with them. And we're about to close our Series A financing round, so we'll make an announcement about that in a few weeks. So yeah, things are good. The company's been growing fast, and as digital assets become the norm, which will happen over the next decade, I think a service like Shapeshift will be increasingly important as a way for anyone in the world, unless you're in New York, to convert one type of digital property into another.
Are you seeing any stumbling blocks or roadblocks to the adoption of cryptocurrency or your guys' ability to help people move it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a huge challenge. So the Bitcoin industry in general, which I'll define just as all digital assets, is growing. It's clearly growing in terms of transaction count, in terms of market cap, in terms of number of users and wallet count and all that kind of thing. But it's not growing at the sort of like hockey stick growth rate that many people expect new technologies to grow at. And so you can read that, in either way. On one hand, it is successful and it's been growing for 7 years, and Bitcoin's been the best performing currency for like six out of the last 7 years in the whole world. But at the same time, not more than a few million people around the world are really using it. And it needs to get a lot bigger before it's commonplace. So, largely people and their habits with money are very sticky. And learning how to use an entirely new form of money, it's not just a new app like Apple Pay, which is just, a bank account with a sexier face on it. But a whole new type of money and a whole new type of financial infrastructure, that takes a lot of time and education and a lot of work to get people comfortable with that, even just on a sort of philosophical level. So I'm not surprised that it's taking a while to really get into the mainstream, but it'll get there because, just as people don't really send letters anymore because it's faster and easier to move emails around, the same principle applies to money. I can send Bitcoin anywhere in the world instantly at almost no cost. Whereas, you know, if I'm trying to send fiat currency, it's often faster to get the cash and like strap it to an anvil and FedEx the anvil to another country. That can be done faster than a bank wire sometimes. So, you know, the writing is on the wall, I think.
Okay. I don't know if you can disclose anything, but I guess you were invited to Satoshi Roundtable this year.
Yeah.
Anything you can talk about that was interesting or amazing or unusual?
So it's the second time I've gone. Basically, it's a Bruce describes it as a private but not secret event. So it is like 35 or 40 people invited, and you know, kind of leaders in the Bitcoin industry, and it's largely kind of a social gathering to just catch up with people and just talk about things. The major conferences around the world are always so busy, and there's, you know, hundreds of people and lots of formal structure and talks and everything. And, you know, for some of us who have been involved in the industry now for more than half a decade, a lot of us are friends, and a lot of us have worked on a lot of projects together. And it's just nice to catch up with these people and have some time to have, you know, deep talks with them about the industry and where it's going.
Right. Anything interesting that came out of it that you can talk about, or is it all kind of you know, kept private?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing, and basically the rules there are Chatham House rules, so people can say what was said there, but aren't supposed to attribute it to anyone. So basically, you know, one person there explained, you know, on good evidence that at this point, every important person in the world of finance, banking, and government is very familiar with Bitcoin. Not familiar in that they know, like, technically how it works on a detailed level, but they understand existentially what it is and what it means, and they understand that it could absolutely be an extinction event for certain companies, certain industries even, that it is going to be extremely consequential. And that's fairly new, because especially like when I got involved, no one in positions of power at any organization took Bitcoin seriously if they'd even heard about it. Now though, in, you know, late 2016, early 2017, that's different. And the highest levels of power, both politically and in a corporate sense, are very much paying attention to Bitcoin. And so it's something that people need to be aware of.
Well, very good. So, you know, last question or two, how can people get involved with Shapeshift? Is it just as easy as going to the website, or, you know, what can they do to start trading digital assets?
Yeah. I mean, if you've only ever used Bitcoin, you know, and you were curious about some of these other blockchain assets, Shapeshift is the fastest and easiest way to buy or sell them. So you can, you know, literally go there, and 2 minutes later you can have converted one thing into another. All you need is a wallet for the coin that you want. I'll make a plug for Exodus.io, which is a really nice multi-token wallet that you can, very very secure and great user interface, and they have Shapeshift integrated into the wallet itself. So you can store digital assets on your computer yourself without trusting any other party, and convert through that wallet natively. So that's a great resource. And if you're interested in this stuff, I mean, go to coincap.io, look at all the different coins, and just kind of, you can get a feel for how they move and change. And each one is an interesting project. You know, they all have their own little developer communities. They're enthusiasts. Some of them are totally worthless and stupid. Some of them are going to change the world, and people largely don't know which is which yet.
Definitely. Any other currencies are going to be adding that you don't have right now in the near future?
Yeah, we have about 4 or 5 on our short list that we plan to add, just for development resource time. We haven't added any in like a month or so. But yeah, we add anything that tends to start seeing more than, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 of exchange volume a day. And when an asset gets to that level, we will consider adding it. And especially if it's something like an Ethereum-based token, then it's relatively easy to add. So we'll prioritize those just for development reasons.
Okay. Well, very good. Any other resources or things that you want to talk about?
No, I think that's good.
Okay. Well, Eric, I appreciate your time. You're always doing new and innovative things in the space, so it's really good to talk to you. Thanks for doing the interview.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on the show.
You've been listening to the Bitcoin.com podcast. Visit Bitcoin.com today, the number one place in the world to learn about Bitcoin, open your first wallet, buy your first Satoshis, and get involved in the Bitcoin ecosystem that is changing the world as we know it.